Yeah. Next starter.
Have the ball.
You know, the ball.
I guess my question is, like, to what extent do we have a Masorah on philosophy? And, like, it would seem like we have, like, a basic one, I guess, like, certain Masorahs, like, all the Rishonim would read through, and that's part of a real philosophical Masorah.
Right.
And the question is, to the in ideas that we don't have a real philosophical Masorah on, like, you see, like, you're trying to argue on. And, like, assuming we're not at the level to, like, really get into philosophical arguments or like how to be like Gilgamesh Pesukim that teach philosophical ideas, like how can you really like have a bunch of confidence in like one idea over the other, like it's real power of our Masorahs, so like the reason to have like confidence in those philosophical ideas, but beyond that it's kind of hard,
right?
You're just like understanding it secondhand, that's the source of your conviction secondhand.
So for instance, do you have any examples that you could think of to help clarify the question?
I don't know, like one Friday we did a face section, it was like, something like, plus the question was like, poke, abo, nabo, sablon.
Right.
And like, there's different Rishon and like the Ramban and Ibn Ezra that argue on like what it means, and they don't like each other's shot about like that idea about God. I'm saying, how could like, you could take either idea on its own, right, and it's hard to really.
You mean they're not just arguing about Pshat and Pasuk, they're arguing about what the truth
is. Sometimes they're talking about Pshat and Pasuk.
Right. That doesn't bother you as much.
Because then you could say both ideas are true, it's just a question of what this Pasuk is trying to teach you. When they're arguing like on philosophical ideas about God and Hashkafa and things like that, like, are you supposed to have much confidence in either opinion? If it's not like really part of the Masorah, and I'm assuming you can't like really get into the arguments on the level if they can see that this is right and that's wrong.
That much is speculation in your part.
Yeah, like, no clear
Masorah,
like, you can't really decide which one is more true, necessarily,
than
advanced philosophical principles.
Right.
What are you supposed to do,
then? Right, so, I'm not sure what your question is, though, because, so then you don't know?
Just don't know. Okay.
I mean, some things you don't know. That's why I think that the Ram says somewhere that says there's no Psak in Ashkafa. Because there's no, like, when it comes to Maisa, so you have to act, there's a mitzvah, you know, there's a halacha, you have to decide you have to act, so then you have a system of Psak. There's certain truths. Let's say we don't know what is Olam Haba. Ultimately, Olam Haba, physical or non-physical. You know, so the Rambam holds it's non-physical, and Rambam holds the ultimate state of Olam Haba is in this world.
You don't know.
No, you don't know. But it doesn't. There's no really. Like in things like using like current like foundations, where your whole life is built upon, and your whole belief system is built upon, and you know.
Then
you have Masorah, and then those things are very important because they affect you know. But in certain details or whatever, certain things you just don't know. So sometimes you could study the sides, you can see the possibilities, you could put the certain sphikas, you just can't resolve. But I guess it seems like the foundations, the fundamentals are Masorah, and they're accepted by, you know, by and large by all the, you know, all the Masorah. But there are certain things which I guess when it comes down to the more detailed types of things, or a particular Midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu about, you know, Pukit Avonos or whatever. I mean, they use their minds. Apparently, there was no clear Masorah. And you could use your minds as best as you could, but ultimately, I don't think you can be machria between them. And you may have a leaning or whatever, but you have to realize that it's very limited, and, you know. But I don't know if it makes that much of a nach,
Kamina. Yeah, it means our knowledge of God is very limited, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
Anything beyond, like, basic Masorah, like, there's a thousand different possibilities in your show.
Right, I guess so. But I mean, you know, your mind could work in the areas and try to have some way. I mean, you live a life, and I feel like in a certain sense you think about things in a certain way. I mean, you don't have the confidence that it's a certain thing. You have to know what you know for solid, what's proven, and what's just, you know. But certain, you know, there's certain, I'm not sure the extent of it. Certain things are, you know, I don't know how exactly you draw the lines. There's a lot of things we do know.
Right.
You know, but there's a lot of things we don't. Yeah, I don't know what to say about it.
Yeah.
Unless you could further hone your question. It's bothersome. You would like more certainty about these things. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's it. No, there's much to say there. Unless you know. Yeah, Jacob.
Can
I ask a question? Yeah,
sure. Okay.
Is there a follow up on what Matt's saying? Anyone else have any follow up on that point? No? Okay. Shoot. What? Okay, pass.
General, let's say you have friends from different areas, and let's say you have friends here and you have friends somewhere else from a long time from the past, or just in general you have a close friend, and you're not always with them, but you try to relate to them again. Mm-hmm. How could you go back to relate to them if you're always here? Let's say you're always in the same spot. How do you go back to relating to them? Meaning, like, if you don't feel like you're always part of the group, but yet you still want to relate to them, even though they don't have the same opinions and the same thought process, like the same ideals as you, how do you still chill with them? Be around them even though they don't think
like. Like when you're in Yeshiva, you might have ideas that they don't have.
Is that what you mean? Is this a critical question be asked, like, for, like, your average American high school kid who's going to college, or is this something to do with, like, yeshiva, Torah?
Probably after Israel, post-high school.
Maybe because you're, like, more into Torah and what?
Just in general. Because, like, sometimes, like, if you make new friends or something, you're around a certain... You're around the same people every day. They became your friends. You no longer associate with them so much. But yeah, on the other hand, once in a while, they are still your friends, and you still want to relate to them once in a while. How do you relate to them? I mean, when you go to them, how do you relate to them if they don't have the same? If we're not on the same page anymore.
Right. I know. It's an interesting thing. I was just talking to this about Matt. Was I talking about that or something? I was telling someone about. It's like I used to have like these two friends. Like, the day I left high school, I don't think I ever talked to anyone in my high school class again, but I left after my junior year. I just came to Yeshiva, and, like, I never looked back, you know? But I had some of these, like, kids from elementary school, these two kids I was friends with, because I grew up with them, you know? Like, high school, I went to MTA, it was, like, far from my house, it was just kind of, you know? But there's two kids I was friends with, and I guess, like, just over time, we just, like, the thing is, like, I think the thing with friends is, like, friends of the past, it's, like, kind of weak. It's, like, it has to be, like, a positive interaction. I just found with these kids, like, half the time I was talking about, oh, yeah, remember in fifth grade when, you know? It's just, like, if your relationship isn't in the present, it's, like, somewhat pathetic, you know? Because, like, well, you are now. You're the guy, you know, you're the Jacob man of today. And if you don't share anything with them, so, like, you could reminisce for a certain thing, and, you know, it's just, like, in a certain sense, what you shared with them was those experiences of the past. And if you grow up, this idea of growing apart, you know? But it depends. There is such a thing as, like, early friends who are, like, you have a certain place in your heart and you have a certain type of closeness that you're there for each other and, you know, you kind of relate to each other. If you have friends like that, then I don't know. Then I think you'll find, you know... I don't know. The problem is, like, what do you talk about? You're going to go back to that world. You don't talk like... You're involved and interested in different things and... But, I don't know.
I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
Yesterday, Friday night, I went to a friend's house from Israel.
Right.
And he had like five or six other guys with him from Israel that were a part of group, sort of.
Right.
So, at first, I was nervous because I'm not really associated with them so much anymore.
Right.
And I was like, I didn't know how this would turn out, you know, and it went okay, but like, even today was a little. It was just different. It just wasn't the same, and it just felt a little weird being there on the same side. Like, on the other hand, it's like they're your friends also. It was like I didn't know what.
Right.
Like I couldn't. There were like things like I couldn't say certain things because they don't have the same ideals. But on the other hand, they're still your friends.
Like, yeah.
I was a little. It was sort of like a big. I was conflicted.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, it's a weird kind. I know the type of feeling.
Right. Because like there's a friend from. They all go to, well, most of them go to Lander or YU, you know, and I guess they have, I don't know, just, it was, we're just very, you know, we're all very, every person is different,
yeah,
as right. Obviously and stuff.
Right.
Like,
right.
It was just like, you can't
yeah, that's interesting.
You're not with them.
I understand what you mean. Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of the way of the world, I think, you know, I don't know if there's an answer, you just have to. You're gonna have to input something, Adam?
Yeah, I remember you were having this conversation like a month ago maybe, and you were just saying how maybe, I think Gil said he wanted to go to that like conference.
Oh, right.
And he said, are we talking about like, strangers and stuff?
Right.
You said that like, you know, relationships and friendships, they need context.
Yeah, right.
And it was a big point. I was like, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Exactly. These things is like, it's just a certain thing, energy thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Certain, you feel a certain way. It's like, mm-hmm. it doesn't feel yeah. right.
It's also, it's like, especially, it's like hard, like, you have to, like, being a friend of somebody means, like, a certain output on your part. Like, you have to call them, you have to talk to them, you have to this, you have to that. If there's not, like, anything, like, in the, like, yeah, this context, this thing that actually, it's just not, you're not gonna do it. You know, like, these friends you keep in touch with people. Like, it's just not worth it, kind of, you know, what do you really gain from it? It's like, people are more, like, I think friends are largely about, like, you know, it's like, it's largely, it's like a selfish thing. It's like you gain something from it. You gain some of the things from each other. Like, that's the bottom, you know. Friends are like, you get things from each other. And if, like, friends of the past, it's just not worth it for you in a certain sense. You know, like, when you see them and you hang with them, I guess you could try to get it, you know, but it's kind of hard. You're not really. Like, your friends in the past doesn't mean your friends in the present. One thing I thought is kind of cool, I noticed this at one point, is like, if you make friends in yeshiva, like, learning friends, chavrusas. Like, I have friends who are like that. There's chavrusas with, like, they're in yeshiva. Like guy Rabbi Ginsburg, you know, that guy you met with. You know, like, we were friends, you know, we learned together. We were good friends back in the day. But, like, it's like our bond was centered around Torah and around ideas. So it's like, we were also buddies, you know, like, we hung out and we joked around and all that. But it was like, we learned together. We were chavrusas, you know. So we're like chavrusa friends. Like, most of my friends are like that, you know? But it's like, I could see him after years, and, like, we could just, like, pick up where he left off. Because, like, we still, like, my friends from fifth grade, like, our bond was, like, we were talking about a fifth grade teacher. So, like, that's over. But, like, my bond with my real friends are my bond of Torah. And the bond of Torah, like, I'm learning a sugya, he's learning a sugya, we could just come and we could talk about what we're learning or about what our life is around, but it's around ideas, what are we thinking about, you know? So it's like that type of a friendship, I feel, doesn't go stale. Like, you could have those friends, even if, like, you're not with them for years, he's in Israel or whatever, he comes in, I see him at a wedding, and we can just sit down and just start to catch up where we left off and just talk about it or whatever. So it's like, I think it's a cool thing, like, those kinds of friends could be, like, you know, it's not rooted in, like, the past. It's rooted in the present because that's, you know, you share the way you live your life. So I think that's, like, something that's kind of unique and, like, something you should value about, like, friendships you make in yeshiva or guys, like, I said, like, in yeshiva, but guys who you share, like, a bond of learning, a bond of something objective outside of the particular moment that you happen to be in, you know? So, like, you may not be able to talk about the dorm life anymore in 10 years, because, like, that goes to hell, but, like, if your relationship involves something more than that, like, on a deeper level, it's something that, you know, those could be, like, lifelong friends, which you may not see all the time, but, you know, you do encounter all the time, and you can call them at any time, and you can talk to them at any time, and, you know. So, you know, there was a friend, and one new guy, we stopped learning for years, and then we just started learning again, and just, yeah, I remember.
Would you say you would take the initiative to keep the friendship, or just...
Well, in that case...
Or just, yeah.
Oh, it depends what you want, you know? Like, I think a lot of these things, it depends what you want and what your needs are. I don't think you have to have friends. If you feel like you don't have friends and you want friends, then take the initiative. If you feel happy with the friends you have here, then you don't feel like you need... Like, there's, I think you have to feel what you need. If you feel lonely and you feel like you need more friends, then yeah, take initiative. Try to make a... You know, reach out to some guys and try to make it, you know. You mean about guys like here, you mean this? Here, you mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it is good for... I think a person is social by nature, and I think a person needs friends, you know? I think it's an important part of a person's psychological well-being to have friends. So I think if you're lonely and you feel like you don't have any friends, it's hard for a person. It's just, you know? So I think it is good if you don't have any friends, then you should reach out and at least try to make bonds. So I think having bonds and learning... Well, these kinds of bonds are good because they're the kind of things that you could really, you know, have with you for a long time. I mean, I know my best friends are guys I learn with, you know. And something we could always, you know. And especially in theory, you want to learn it to be... The other thing is, if you want to learn it to be part of your life, then if you make your social connections being, like, guys who you learn with, so then naturally you'll be involved in learning, involved in Torah, because that's kind of, you know... When you hang out with those guys, then that'll be a dimension to your life and to your friendship. It kind of keeps you involved in Torah through that, you know.
Let's say a guy doesn't learns, well, let's say it's just not a focus of his life. Let's say he learns not a focus of his life. Would you say that he can't really be able to have, like, a meaningful friendship?
No, I don't think that. I mean, is there such a thing as good friends outside of, in the world, right?
Yeah.
I'm saying more, my point, what?
They might share something.
What?
They might share a common focus.
Yeah, they may share a common focus, yeah. That's true. Yeah, like tennis guy, like let's say sports guys. Yeah. Guys who are in sports. Okay. I guess you have the same kind of thing.
Like a guy like us, not some guy that's, focus is like something else.
Oh, it depends on your life. It depends on what you value. Like, for instance, I would say two guys who are like both Knicks fans. And they grew up as high school guys, all like watching Knicks games, every weekend over this, that, you know, they could go out in different walks of life, and 20 years later they'd get together and, like, sit and, you know, enjoy Knicks games the same way they did 20 years ago, you know? It's more like, it depends on that. That would also be, like, a thing of the present, I guess, you know? Like, then you could just say, like, maybe it's, you know, not as deep a friendship as, like, someone who shares something more. But it's still an idea, obviously, to share something about your life, which is, it's going to be something in the present. A friendship in the past, I just think, is bound to fall.
So it's just experiences?
Yeah, it's based on past experiences. I just feel like that only goes so far. I just remember, you could reminisce for so long, but it just doesn't, it's just empty. You know, there's nothing, you know. You have to have something, like, current. So I guess some like, a sports injury is something you can do that. But people can have a bond. I don't see why you can't have an emotional connection or whatever. I'm just saying it's like for, you know, because for me, I found like that's something which it depends on what's meaningful to you. If that's what's meaningful to you, then you could create a good. Like, you feel a person's attachment to Torah, it could be very strong, and you could share that with somebody else. You could have a very strong type of a bond with somebody.
But it doesn't necessarily have to be Torah. Like, you can have a guy who, you know, asks philosophical questions all the time, or like, I don't know, like a guy like George Costanza. That's what first popped into my mind. Like, he's got these ridiculous questions on his mind, right? But like, he's always engaged in a conversation,
right?
And it's always in something, you know, like there's always an idea being transferred. Maybe like a childish idea,
yeah, right.
But like, it's always a conversation going.
Right.
It's like, oh, what's on your mind at this?
Yeah, moment? Right. Yeah, that's true. It doesn't have to be Torah. It's to be thinking, right? Is that what you mean? It could just be like, or whatever, some sort of a something. Yeah.
Perhaps you're saying that's like. Would have a better friendship if you had that type of focus, you know, that type of philosophical focus.
It's a good question. Is it better friendship? It's a good question.
It seems like the things that are more permanent are the things that you're looking for. Than like you're saying, talking about the past, like that was a temporary thing, like a fifth grade thing. That was a long time ago.
Right.
The Knicks is like. Basketball, the NBA, it's like that's kind of his future onward. Like Torah is an everyday thing for forever, sort of, I guess you could say. So it seems like things that are more permanent are more important based on for a basis of relationship.
Right. There's another thing, which maybe is a good question you're asking Yaakov about the better. I'm not sure. You guys tell me what you think. But I would see is one problem with friends could be like. Like, friends are oftentimes, I think, like, kind of fight, get into different, like, arguments or something, is that true?
Yeah.
Yep.
You know? Yeah. So, like, sometimes. It depends. See, I'm not sure that it could be somewhat of, like, depends on the person, depends on the thing, you know? But I would think is that insofar as, it's just, like, the more your relationship is rooted in something, like, objective and real, so I would think it's, like, less prone to having, like, these types of arguments and fights, you know? Like, I think if so far as your friendship is rooted in some, like, emotional, like, more basic emotional value, then I feel like it's closer to your emotions and to your, like, more base types of things. It would lend itself more to, like, arguing and fighting and crossing each other and petty, you know? I feel the more it's, the bond is tied to something objective and, you know, it's just more a thing of the person who's more involved in a world of ideas. I think in general it's going to be less involved in the pet. So I just think in general, if your bond is in that framework, so I think you're kind of, you're removed from like these, like it's a more, something like that. It's less rooted in the, there's probably less pettiness involved in it, I would think. But I don't know, it depends on the friendship. I mean, it's hard to make a generalization though. A lot of based on different people. And yeah, no, it could be as also, it's like you share, the friendship is based on that you share something with somebody, you know? I feel that's the strength of the relationship is based on how deep the thing is, how deep the bond is. So insofar as you could really value, I think a person could value Torah more than a person could value sports. I think it should be more like more real and more deep connection that you have to it. So I would think if you share that, it could be a deeper friendship because you both grab hold of this thing in a deeper way than you grab hold of sports. But I don't know, people grab hold of sports pretty deep. I don't know. It's a good question. I have to think about it more. It's an interesting area to think about, just friends. I don't know if I really subjected it to a deep analysis before, yeah.
Actually, just to add on to the friends thing, I actually just thought about this. I've seen this over from a lot of people's perspectives, and let's say you're friends with someone, right? And let's say like you've got a group of friends, but sometimes they don't invite you to hang out with them in places, or you don't. What's the whole idea? If you're friends with them, why aren't they inviting to hang out with you? I mean, you could say that they just they're just
Okay, go ahead.
So there's a lot of talk going about, like, North Korea, right? And, no, not a lot of talk about North Korea.
I don't know much about it, so it depends on the
time. From, like, an outsider's view, it seems like a lot of these people who live in the country don't think. Like,
in that country?
Yeah. Like, either they don't... So, my question is, like, I view it as either they can't think, or they're suppressing what they think because of their fear of death. So then is it possible for a person to suppress to suppress thoughts over a certain period of time and just completely get rid of that thought and never even think about it ever again? And then is it possible for someone to completely suppress thinking in general and never be able to think? Like, essentially turn into an animal?
It's a good question. I think the Rambam talks about people like that, who are like man in form, but not really.
Really?
Right, potential man, so to speak, you know? Where they're just totally totally live. I think that's what he holds with the early Odeh Zara. That's what they're just totally like animals. Basically, just totally going by their instincts and not involved at all, like living, but, you know? Yeah, in a certain sense, like a child. They're totally not using a human faculty at all. I mean, you see the model of, like... I remember thinking that when I was reading that Mormon book. Did I tell you guys about that Mormon book? I told you about that Mormon book. No, Under the Banner of Heaven, I think it's called. I talked about it, I don't know. How do you know about it? It shows, basically, is like... The religion of Mormon was, like, just invented 200 years ago or so. Joseph Smith. He was like a convicted con man.
No, it wasn't 200 years. Wasn't it like relatively recent?
Yeah, the 200 is relatively recent. No, it was since the 1800s maybe.
Yeah.
But it's like, it was relatively recent, so it's very well documented, and he was like a convicted con man who just like conned people into believing this religion, you know?
Mormon.
It's like the fastest growing religion out there.
So it's the wealthiest
one. What is Mormon?
Mormon.
Really?
The time this book was written, I was, yeah.
I thought it was that Mormon.
Islam, I don't know. That's like a percentage. I don't know how they measure these things, but it's very fast going. And it's like crazy. And you see how wild and crazy it is. This book is really good. It shows you like how it was. I remember just thinking these people are like sheep, just following.
Sheep.
Yeah, they really convey a portrait to like the dangers of what are. And it's about, it's like kind of traces, it's a cool book. This author is really good. It traces the, I read a few of his books, but it traces the, it's like there's this guy who's like this murderer, this guy who killed his like ex-wife or something, because God told him to. God told him to, but he was crazy. But he was also, he was always crazy and he was religious. I mean, it's like, the book kind of shows, like, the difference between, like, insanity and religion and structure. The religious is like, it's not that easy to differentiate between the two, you know?
But presumably those people think outside religion. Like, if you were to ask them, you know, let's say Mitt Romney became the president, right? And he was posed with, like, do we attack Iran or do we not? Presumably he's going to think about that.
Right? Yeah, that's true.
But his views are suppressed in terms of religion.
Yeah, that's true. The person dichotomizes, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what his religious, you know, how religious he really is or whatever, but yeah. I mean, the person does dichotomize, you're right. I mean, at the one end, when it comes to certain areas, they can be smart, and then other areas, they become stupid. For sure. For sure. I mean, I'm sure you've met a lot of people who are, like, really shrewd businessmen, but then when it comes to religion, they just say stupid things, right?
Right.
No, that's so true. It's interesting how a person can do that. Somehow it's like an area which they just decide to shut off their mind. And yeah, I'm not sure. These guys, I don't know if they did all that all together, though. Some of these guys are just crazy. I mean, the Amish, they had this thing. These guys invested money. They bought out property because they had some prophecy. There's going to be this gold. They're digging for gold. They bought this land in Utah or something. Millions of dollars or something like that. That's called the dream mine. There's no gold there, but somehow they
just invested.
Yeah, they just invested, or they think, I don't know, I forget the story. But it's really interesting, that book. If you're looking for, like, a good read, it shows you, like, it's really interesting, it's a good story, and it tells you, like, gives you insight into, like, the mind of Zara, like, how corrupt it could be, and, like, you know what it is? It's like, all these religions are made up, but, like, they're made up, like, thousands of years ago, so you can't, like, it's, like, shrouded, the history is shrouded in, like, mystery, like the Mormon, it's like well documented, the whole thing. It's like in America, like within like 150 years.
Video on YouTube that I watched.
South Park?
No, not the South. Like, it was a legitimate video from like the 80s or something like that. And it's like a 20-minute video, and they go through the entire history of Mormonism. And like, I was reading the YouTube comments on the bottom, and people are like, "There's no way people take this seriously." Like, this was supposed to be a recruiting video.
Yeah, really?
And I couldn't stop laughing.
Really?
It was just pathetic.
Yeah. Like, well, that's the South Park episode. They have a South Park episode that actually, like, told the story of Mormon, but they tried to make it like they were making a joke, but they were really just telling the story.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So it's like, that's all they're doing. It's like you'd think that it's a spoof, but it's really the story. They tell it, you know. it's like a good cop, you know. This book is good, I know. It's interesting, but I just love that because it reminds me of, like, there is such a thing as a person who just totally becomes, like, an extreme form, like, becomes, his whole life becomes like an animal. But I think your average person, like, has really the dichotomies, you know, in certain areas, they just shut off their minds. It's interesting how you could do that. But, yeah, right, you can go to a businessman, you can be the shrewdest guy, and then you just have a conversation with them, and then, you know. You know, you could have a truth even in learning. You could have a guy who could be really know how to learn, so, yeah. But then you talk to him about philosophy, and he says stupidest things, you know? So, I don't know, it just seems like, I don't know, a person has the ability to somehow do that. So, like, not use their mind in certain areas.
This specific group of people in North Korea, like, they are robots. When Kim Jong-il died, the way they reacted was just, like, it seemed like they were forced crying. And, like, they were, you know, when a video camera came on them, they were, like, in tears. But this is a guy who murders them in cold blood, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not like they're suppressing just one thing. They're suppressing everything. Or, like, they're just not thinking in every area.
Right.
Because if you think in, like, think police are going to come after you.
Right. Yeah, I don't don't know. I don't know much about these guys or anything about it. But, yeah, I guess your whole life can be taken. Yeah, I mean, if you could definitely be, like, the slave could be forced into submission and totally, you know, like, what do they call that syndrome? The Stockholm syndrome? You know, like, it could be some crazy thing that, like, he's there, you know, he's their leader, he's their god, he's with us, and, like, it's abusive, but whatever. But, you know, that's their life. I don't know. You have to study the psychology of the thing, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, it's hard for me to, you know, I don't really know. I'm not the particulars at all, so it's hard for me to say in general. But I think it's definitely somehow possible for a person to definitely close off their mind in certain areas. Or in all areas. Yeah, I think you could do it in all areas. I don't see why not. I think the Ram talks about it. I have to remember if I come across it again, I'll try to say it. I know I've seen that before. He talks about how he killed the early Zara, the humans in the written like shape or whatever, but not at all. Totally like animals. Yeah. Okay. Next.
Yeah, I couldn't check the ball.
Check the ball.
Wanted to know, you told me, like, the law of attraction.
The law of attraction.
Yeah.
Is that in physics or in halakha? Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I don't know.
Guys, or?
No, just, like, positive, like, if you think of something, like, you believe in it, like, it will make sort of happen.
It's like if you think you can do it, you know you can do it, it's gonna happen.
What do they call it? The law of attraction?
Yeah.
Like if you have a certain energy towards something.
Is that like a total idea or like in the world?
It's a world idea.
A world idea. Really? Where do you hear that?
Yeah, a rabbi from Mimasar.
I've seen it somewhere.
Really?
Is it applied to like if you wish it hard enough you get it? Like I think
that
outside of like you or instead of you?
They call it omnipotence of thoughts. That's the way I think.
Yeah,
Freud called it that.
Can you wish like pizza is going to come?
Well, I think it comes from childhood. Because a kid wishes that his parents come, and they just come. And whatever he wishes, it happens. You know, you're a baby. That's just the way of the world when you're a baby. So I think it becomes like, it's a powerful infantile type of a thing. They call it omnipotence of thoughts. Because the parents learn how to read the thoughts of the kids, and that's like your earliest experiences are that. So I think that idolaters basically never grow up, and they still take on these childish tendencies, so that they feel like they have that, you know. That's, I think, I mean, it's part of growing up and maturing and perfection, is to be able to overcome those wishes, those feelings. It's just not true, you know. I mean, it's clearly not true. You know, it just doesn't work. The world doesn't work that way. That's like the infantile, wishful thinking that the world works that way.
Yeah, I don't know if it's so literal. It's just like...
Yeah, so then it's basically... Yeah, like it's one of those things that you just say, and then when it works out, you say, oh, see, it's true. When it doesn't work out, you say, oh, yeah, I don't mean it literally, I don't know, whatever, you know. But it's just not... There's no evidence for such a thing. I'm sure if you do an experiment with that.
No, but it works both ways. It's like you have negative energy, then
bad. Yeah, no, I think it's totally just like it's a childish thing. I think it's not really. I think it's always against that.
I think you're working with yourself.
Religions are into that.
Right.
That's a religious type of thinking. It's like fantasy thinking.
You
right? What you wish will come true, and what you hate this. The world. Yeah, it's not, it's against Chachma. The world just doesn't work that way. Science shows us the world works by, you know, cause and effect, and it doesn't, your mind doesn't affect the outside world. And, you know, you have wishes that that's the case, and you want the world to go that way, and, you know, so I think a person takes his wishes and projects them onto reality, you know. That is the core, I think that's the cornerstone of, like, you know, childish thinking and idolatrous thinking, and most religions have thoughts like that. Have you heard that in Torah, that type of thing, or not really?
No, I just think it's
going to say, all yeah. Torah things. What? Yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, Torah thinks very negatively against it. It's like the antithesis of Torah, that type of thing.
Right,
you know? I wonder if, I don't know if Jews think that, maybe they do, maybe they don't.
Does the Torah believe in, like, karma?
Karma? I don't know what
karma is. Like, is music like either karma, or is it different?
I don't know what karma is.
I was basically like, whatever you do is going to come back.
Oh, you do is going to come back to you?
Not like direct, not like maybe this instant. do something good with something.
They say if you give charity, then you're going to get 2 times the amount or something.
Oh, really? Yeah. Things like that?
Here, yeah,
zero. Oh, it's in that, but not in karma.
That's kind of like karma-ish.
Karma-ish.
You do something good, and something, that same thing happens to you.
Well, it's the same
in a different way, but like equally good. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's a good question. I think, look, there is an idea of Midakanegamida, which I think means that at least one thing of Midakanegamida would be that God punishes some Midakanegamida. So I think it means is that when God punishes a person, the main idea is, one idea is that it's to try to get a person to do tshuva. You know, and if a person's punishment is in line with something that he did, it will remind him of the shortcoming that he has or the thing which he did, and it causes him to repent. You know what I mean? So that's the idea. So if God punishes them in that way, it's like it helps a person do tshuva because it reminds you of that thing. You know, otherwise you just have something bad happen to you. But to know Nash, it hurts. But how does that? The whole point is to help you realize your shortcoming and cause you to do tshuva. Insofar as it's about the very thing that you sinned with, then it could help, you know, it would point you towards there, sure. But that's like, that's an idea of Midakanegamida. Or it could be this idea of Schar, insofar as maybe, I guess that would be the most similar thing if it happens, in similar thing to what you're thinking about karma, you know, like exactly. But I would think this karma thing sounds like a similar type of magic, a law, like there's a law that things like just happen like that. You know, they mirror what happened past or whatever. And I think that's not really an idea. I mean, there is an idea insofar as God is involved in punishing. There's like such a thing like that. But I would think the general thing, they just think this emotion. I think a person has a desire that the world works like around his wishes, fantasies, fears, hopes, you know. And that the whole world kind of is all these things happening because he wished this, he did this, he did that, and everything kind of, you know, all these things, occurrences out there are signs, you know.
It's kind of like anti-God.
Yeah, it's anti-God, it's anti-Chachma, it's anti-laws of nature, and God's world is like, there's a world of knowledge and ideas and science, and, you know, and it just like, that's your internal wishes, and, you know, is that the world is all centered around you and around your wishes and fears or whatever. But I think if you're a chacham, I think you see these things aren't true. And I think they feel true sometimes because they happen a lot, but I think your mind finds connections and associations, and when it doesn't work out, you don't realize it. You know, if you actually did a statistical analysis of these things, I'm sure you'd realize there's no basis for them at all, you know? It's kind of like on that video, that Randy stuff, you know? People want to believe. You look for different coincidences and you look for different things.
Who was that guy? What was his name?
James Randi.
No, but who was the guy?
Uri Geller?
Uri Geller.
Yeah, right. That was his thing. Wanted your TVs to start working. Remember he said that? That was his thing. That was probably that same law. You know?
Kind of like someone said, like, this year, last year, our teacher was like, get ready. Said, like, the American dream.
Yeah.
It's
a lot of
like, if you work
hard,
though,
you achieve anything.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of against,
kind of against, like,
God, because
it's
true
that
you can work as hard as you want, but
might
still
not
happen.
Yeah, right. It's true. It's true. Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I think these things are come from wishes, you know? Wishes and
wishes.
Huh?
Very Disney.
Disney. Yeah, right. Yeah, what's that Make-A-Wish upon a Star, you know, something like that. All that type of stuff, you know, if you believe, or, you know.
Right,
you're right, Disney, it's true. Yes. Where your wishes come true. Doesn't your wishes come true, something like that.
Yeah.
So there's some theme park, some motto or whatever, right? Where your wishes come true. Fairy tales, yeah, all that stuff. All that stuff plays into that type of thing. Comes true. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, good question. Yeah.
I guess what's the idea of like hetter or like a cool? Like sometimes we say like probably shouldn't do this, but like if you need to, there's like a cool or a hetter.
Mm-hmm.
Like is it mutter or rasa? Like mutter, like anyone should be able to do it at all times?
Right.
You they're able to do it.
That's a good question.
Feel lazy.
Right.
You don't feel like it today.
Yeah. Oh, and maybe just add like a little piece onto that. Just to add a little piece of what? I don't think this is just anything. I guess what is our halacha today? Meaning it just kind of seems like it's just a bunch of like, you just find clues and I'll just rely on whatever clues I want to rely on. I'm still relying on the system.
Yeah, I guess what inspired us, like Sammy was saying that, like Red said and shared that if there's like quality sterile milk and regular milk, it's like the same price. It's not going to have to belong for you. Like, it's probably a better idea to get the plugs out there and rely on the header, the cooler, quality sterile file, possibly get some stuff. So, like, but if it's mutter, like, why not? And if it's usher, then you should never be able to do it. Well, like, and sometimes we do say that, like brachos, let's say. If you say suffix brachos lahakim, it's not like you're being maple. It's like, that's the halacha. So it seemed like here, like, if there's a kula, that's like halacha, that you don't have to be there.
Right.
So. Could it be there's a difference between psak and, like, definitive halacha? Like, halacha dictates by brachos, you could be maple. But, like, this would come down to more of a psak on a...
Why doesn't the Pesach here tell you that you can be Mekel?
So I think like a lot of things in halacha aren't clear cut. I mean, a lot of things are clear cut. Like certain things are awesome. Right. You know? But other things, there's like different shittos. There are machlokes and there's like different ways to go. And right, let's say something like that. There's machlokes, and there's like one shito holds this, and different shito. You know, there's like certain leniencies. There are certain positions are make all that things, and
they
hold his mother, but others hold the tzatzer. Yeah, right, but others hold the tzatzer. Right, so there's different positions, different shitos regarding certain halachic certain things. You know, now.
Aren't there, like, halakhic ways
of dealing with that? Not always, no, not necessarily. I mean, you have to oppose it, you can oppose against the Pasuk and the Shiloh based upon the various information out there. There are different Pasukim, and the Pasukim and the Pasuk go different ways. So maybe a Pasuk would say that he leans towards saying in his mind it seems like this is the right way to go. But he's not sure. So he may say in general, he would say, it's Shiloh Vimachim, because he thinks his view of the Sugya seems, let's say, the Rav went this way, or Moshe went this way, you know? So let's say Ravi does this again, it seems to him like the Rav is the right way to go, you know? But Ramosha's Ramosha, he's not saying Ramosha's that wrong. He's saying is in general, he thinks the Rav's way is smoother, cleaner, and, you know, and that's what he's meaning. Like. But let's say someone has a situation where if they're going to follow the Rav, then they're going to lose a lot of money, or it's going to cause a big fight in their family. They're going to end up having to get divorced, or I don't know, something like there's such a thing. So, like, the Torah is like this principle of the Torah, the Torah is not meant to be an oppressive system. And so far as there is a svar to say that it's mutar, and that Moshe is a shita, and it's not crazy, it's not, you know, so you have a right to pask in the kula, and to allow the person to be mekel. If you know there's no, if you know it's wrong and there's no such thing, then you can't do it. There's such thing as halacha. There's a time where halacha says you have to, you know, you have to lose, you have to this, you whatever it is. But sometimes there's like you have to have a leaning one way, and therefore a posig will say in general he'll go that way. But then at the same time, in a situation of like the situation has some meruba or this or that, so it's like there's room to be mekel. But I think it's because there's...
So if you have, like, those two positions, like, you say, like, something there about on the kula or something, and it's, like,
it depends.
For everybody, no?
Depends. But there's such a thing as, like, many shittos lined up on one side, so I don't know if you just say something about the kula. Like, you could be making... Like, I don't know any time you have one shita going one way, you say something about the kula. There's an idea of being achriya between the shittos. But, like, achriya could be not absolute, like, that one shita that wrong. It could just be, we follow the road, we follow the way, which is one of the stavar. But at the same time, the other shittos exist. It's just that we don't follow it. But there's an idea of, like, when you want to be Mekel, if there's a pressing situation, you can rely on certain linear positions, you find different Hetera. So the idea of finding Hetera, which means is that the normal way that a person is Melei, and there's a in line with the way, so most Mustaver seems to be this, you know, smoothest way of learning an area. But then there are isolated situations where a person gets in a bind, then you have a Shaila, and you have all, you know, other factors to consider, like a family type of thing or whatever, you know. So then there's, look, if there's other fish, does Yeshua need this one? That's the idea. It's like, does Yeshua need this one? There's such a thing. There are other sheets out there. So we're not confident that she does it wrong. It's just that in general, that's not how we know, like, because we're.
Is there a way,
you know,
of dealing with all the different sheets from, like, coming out with a.
No, but part of the factors are the other factors. Because the idea is that part of the way is that a posting has to decide, and the posting decides based on the various things. So there's a difference. The situation is part of it. Because of the fact that it's like, it's not, there's no clear rule that you have to go, like, let's take a simple example. It's like, you have, like, most sheet does, you know, is it five sheets go one way and one sheet does another way. There's no halacha that you have to go, like, five sheet does. There's the Moro Ra's right to see the area, and he's right to go to Pascha Shaila. Yeah, but in general, I think he would go like the five sheetahs, because it's mine. Let's say there's all other things being equal, it seems like that's a smoother way to go. Moro Ra, you're going to do their right, if not the other one. Does that mean the other one's wrong? That doesn't mean it's wrong.
If you would go like the Shidi
Yachid, would you like? I mean, he has a right to if he wants to, but I guess in general, you say, why are you doing that?
Right.
Why would you be doing that?
I'm saying if he did it, are you like in violation?
No.
No.
If he did, no, it's not a violation. He's a posik, and a posik, I don't think he's like a rasha for doing so. There's no official rule that you can't pasken like a shita yechidi. But I think in general, the general rule of the principle of psak is, I think, is that, you know, there's an idea of an ordinary nihug, and then there's a nihug, which is asal tchak. But I think that's when it comes down to things which aren't clear cut. Things which are clear cut are clear cut. So that's it. There's no, something's asal tchak. There are other things which aren't, I think it's more probably based upon, you know, more of that nowadays, because there's a lot of indeterminacy in psak, and this is probably what becomes into what you were talking about, Sammy. It's like, things aren't, like, used to be a sense of a bet and a god, and they pasuk, and that'll be it, and there's no, you know, I mean, I'm not sure if there's still certain shilas that were more open-ended, but so in general, things would be, like, clear-cut, decided, and that's it. But now you have a lot of things which have a lot of different positions on. So you could be Mekel in pressing situations.
Doesn't that kind of sound like a game, though? Like, it's not really a system where you can just, like, line head there. Just...
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, you can't just find out this for anything, first of all.
But yeah, that's like, let's say I did that, though. That's what I could.
You can't. I mean, you have to have a legitimate, you have to know what's legitimate, what's not legitimate. You can't just go to conservative rabbi and get a head there for anything.
No, I'm saying, let's say you have, like, a lot of gym psaks, and, like, I just go according to all the coolers. So they're all good psaks, though.
But I think the idea is, like, in general, I think you have to have a sheet of what you're doing.
You can't pick and choose. Why not?
Because I think there's an idea, it's like, there's a system. There's a system, there's an idea of shasatak. Shasatak means the Torah values the person's life, the values of this thing, and it means there's an idea of ordinary and the shasatak. So if you're always going to just go with the tuyas and the shitichitas and just picking this the easy way to do everything, I feel like that's not, then what's your system? Your system is just trying to get around things. Your system is just picking the easiest thing. That's not the system. The system, like, why are you going by the shitichit here when you can just...
Why
are you
saying there's an idea of shasatak, though?
Yeah.
You're just picking and choosing when to go going to
kula. Right.
There's an idea of shasatak.
Right. I'm saying is, in general, why are you going by the Shidi Yechidi? Because it's easier for you. I don't think that's like a principle just to go for... Like, the Shas Chag means it's like an extraordinary type of tier, like Tier Yisera or something, or really a person will lose money, or a person who totally values a person's values, and, you know, it doesn't mean like in general. I don't know if values the person who does not want it to do halacha. You know, it's because he's not in the mood. But there's such a thing as Shas Chag. Like means you can lose money, you can lose this, you can have a cause of the machlokas, things like, you know.
It's a category.
Yeah, like a lot of shilas which people come to is they have a case like that. Their parents want them to do this and this and this, and it's going to be the excited and it's going to be whatever. And so, Torah value shalom. Shalom is the value of the Torah. So now you're going to be machmir in kashrus, then be mekel and shalom. And according to the Hare Krishna, so that's part of it. Other values. And see, psaka is an interesting area because you have to be weighing between different things, like different technical, like chumras in a particular sugya, and then like values like shalom, and then the idea of the Torah values of mama, like person's money, those Torahs chaslam and shal yisrael, and like the person's money, you know. So there's like a lot of different factors which are involved in a psaka. And that's all. It's different than I think. That's the main. I think maybe this is the point. Is that this is the point here? Is that there's a difference between learning a sugya and a psak. Like learning a sugya, you're just dealing with a pure idea itself. Psak is like where you're taking, you're actualizing that in the world, and like there's many factors which end up playing into it. It kind of reminds me. It's not exactly an example, but the idea like in physics or in science, like an idealized law, and then like the actual world. Like, you could have a law of gravity, but it never, you could have the equation exactly, but it's never actually going to work because there's always friction, air resistance, and this and that, and all the different, you know, and it's something, the real world doesn't exhibit any idealized law. It's an interaction of many idealized laws, which are, you know. So I feel like psak, like in a sugya, you're isolating one theoretical point. And like, what's the right way to look at it? And you could say that's wrong and that's right. But like a psak is like, now you're realizing it in this world. And in this world, there's like various factors. The person who's alive and doing this shita means he's going to end up this happening. It's, you know, in every case is different. And that's, I think, there's a moro ra has to take this, the real idea, the job of a posik is to basically to bring the world of ideas to the actual, you know, people in a real situation.
So those are real factors.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. I mean, that's why psak's so hard. Yeah, that's why psak's so hard.
How are you supposed to know?
I don't know, you know. That's why I always try to ask Rabbi Shaila's a lot. Try to get... Yeah, it's like, I don't know if there's any rules. It's kind of, you know... Yeah, I don't know if there's any... You just kind of have to... But I know, yeah. Yeah, there's definitely an idea of trying to, you know, find the heather. You know, but it depends. It's a good svara, and you have to be made, you know. But they say, kol tete radif. Torah is not, this is an interesting point also. Torah is not interested in just making a person's life impressive. That's not the point. The point is that a person lives his life with chachma. And he lives a certain life according to a system of principles. Now, if you see a heter, and if you're doing something because there's a heter, so then you're following halacha, and you're doing it because of the heter. You're not just being hefker; you're doing it because there's a heter, and there's a psak, and there's a legitimate way to go. It's to be matter.
Your situation warrants
a heter, and when you do it, you're not just breaking the system; you're acting in line with the position in the system. But at the same time, if the situation doesn't warrant a heter and there is no heter, then that's it. You know, that's it. There's nothing to sort of. There are times where there's no heter. You know, I think there is a case. Rav has this, some sort of share about heter. What he calls it, like submitting to the will of the Almighty or something. He has like a case. He says, in general, the Torah is not very oppressive on a person. He says, one time there's a couple who came to him and they were engaged and they were about to get married or something and they went to visit his, like, whatever, cave or the grave and they saw, like, Rechas Kohanim or something, you know, like on the grave sometimes they have like Kohanim doing whatever. And like, I guess she was like a divorcee or she had slept with a guy or something, and like, so they had like, they couldn't get married, you know, because if you're coming, you can't, you know. And they were a young couple in love and this and that and the other thing, and that was it. There was no anything. It's all, you know, there is such a thing as a situation where there's nothing to say. There's no out there. And sometimes Allah makes demands like that. But in general, it's not the case. In general, the Torah is, you know, is in line with the person and being able to, you know, plus being pleasant to a person, you know. But my point is that insofar as a person acts based on heter, he's not just caving in. That's the halacha. He understands there's a psak. The rav has a shita or a svara to do it, and he'll give him a svara. And now he's living in line with the rav is living in line with the chachma because he sees the svara and he's matir based on the svara. And the person knows that the rav is based on a system. But he's not just saying break the system. So I think that's the main thing. The main thing is not a game, because it's about living a system of Chachma, and that's part of the Chachma, to know the situation. You know, I would think, for instance, even in medicine, you can have that. You say a certain thing is not healthy for a person to eat, let's say it's not healthy for a person to eat ice cream. You know, but let's say a person's really depressed, and they say, see, really, ice cream will help them out now, you know? So what I mean is, ice cream good, is ice cream not good? See, it depends. It's a normal thing. It's not a good thing to be just eating ice cream all the time. And it's not going to be good for your health. But if there's a situation that you're going to be depressed, it'll be better for you to eat ice cream and to get out of your depression than to not eat ice cream, you know? So there's, like, various factors. They have to take into account health is part one factor in a human being. So that doesn't mean if a person's depressed and eating poison will be good for him, then you don't take poison. There's a point where you don't just say depression is everything. So a person who's a good doctor knows how to weigh the various factors and say it's not a simple question. Is it, you know, if you just want to ask in a classroom, is ice cream healthy? It's an easy answer. No, it's not. Now, if you ask a doctor, should I eat ice cream now? So then it'll depend. Is this a normal circumstance or is it just clock? Well, does that mean anything's okay in Shabbos Chag? No, not anything. You're not going to let a guy poison in Shabbos Chag. You're not going to, you know. So I'd say it's like that's. So I think like in Halacha is kind of like that. There's like various factors involved. You know, there are lines which can be breached, but at the same time, there are factors. And, you know, a person's life is a factor. The various, you know, losses which are involved in keeping halachas, you know, in the most chamor way are certainly factors of some. Yeah. Definitely. Has to be rubash, has to talk. These are things you find on every page in the Shulchan Aruch, you know. It's all over the place.
It comes from way different
shittas.
Yeah. With these
I think so. I don't think you find it that much in the Gemara. I mean, I can't think of cases. Sometimes, but you have to explain it. Sometimes, maybe. Yeah. Well, that's true. Sometimes. Certain times, Rabbanan are making the Shavta. They set up certain halachos that they're openings in Shavta. Yeah. Right. But then it's like built into the structure of the halacha. I don't know if that's the same thing as this, you know? Certain halachos are only, you know, don't apply on Shavta. Yeah, like maybe they were having something like that. I mean, you have to do it each time, you know? Probably arguably it's different when it's in the sugya than when it's in like a posig. You know, I think in a posig it's more often because of the preponderance of shitas. You know. Yeah. Okay. Good question. Yeah.
So let's say for this Stam guy, not for the posig. How do you go about it? Do you pick a posig? I think so.
You have a posig, you go by, and you go by his halachos, the way he's not like, the way he passes on certain things. And you have a shaila, you ask a shaila. Even if you go a certain way, there's such a thing as a shaila which comes up, and even that's where you normally go, you can ask a shaila, and maybe you have a gula.
Do you pick one posig, or just go according to one? I don't know if you have to. Doesn't that come back to, like, just doing whatever you want then?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if there's, like, a rule like that. But, I mean, there's such a thing as, you know, to have that posik. I don't think if you could just say, if posik is Rabbi, except when he says things I don't really like, then I go, you know, to the youngest Rabbi. Like, yeah, I don't know if you could just say, I mean,
well,
each time.
Meaning logical thing. Like, whatever sounds logical.
Depends. If you're a Rav, I don't think, like, a Stam guy could just say, I think it sounds like it should, you know, I guess, halacha. Any person has the ability to start passing shaylos for himself, you know.
And also, actually, it's like Shulchan Aruch. You can't just read a Shulchan Aruch and you got to go to your Rav every time.
No, I mean, certain things are open, certain things are whatever. I mean, if you have to know who you are, I mean, certain things are open in the Shulchan Aruch and the Shulchan and you know. But then there are things which are machlokas, and you see the different deos and different shittos. So, you know, if you're qualified to make a decision like that, and you know what you're doing, then you could. But in general, you know, if not, then I think you have to ask a shayla.
Doesn't everything have to
be asked if like a person? Yeah, really? No, some things are open. If you forget the Aliyah, I'm sure that's right. So you go back, you have to, you know, it doesn't matter if you don't have to, but if you don't, you know. And there are all hapsukah. So it is all hapsukah.
And we're like, also in general, the Shulchan Aruch is kind of accepted.
Yeah, it's exactly.
Basic.
I mean, you see if there's the chilik adeus. I mean, yeah, if something's there and it's open straight out in the Shulchan Aruch and the Shavura without any arguments, I think, yeah, that's accepted. You don't have to assume maybe there's someone who argues out there. I mean, they bring it down on the pages of the Shavura, you'll see that, you know. You look it up. If you know how to do some research, you see when something is open, clear cut, and when it's machlokas, then you ask the shayla.
Saying, like, you can't just open a Rambam and
I'm
okay.
No, I don't think you should open a Rambam. You have to know if there's other sheep that's passed the Rambam. You have to open a Mishapur, kind of the Shalom Rambam, take into account the different things. I don't think you just pass that Rambam.
Because if there are other
sheets,
then you have to have a
rub,
like you have to
have to be machri. If there's some method of being machri, you can't just say, I go like the way that sounds best to me.
Right.
Or I go like the Rambam. Unless you do everything like the Rambam. I think you have a right to say, I just do everything like the Rambam.
You can. Well, that's like picking a rub.
Yeah. Problem is, it's hard to know how we open everything. There's a guy in Yeshiva, there's this guy who came around, who's like kind of Sephardi, and he had a problem because he thought a lot of the, almost all the Sephardi posts we could find were very rooted in like Kabbalah. You know, have you found that?
Yeah, I have found that before.
So he couldn't find the post like that. It didn't include that at all. Does the Vadia say if he has it also sometimes, right?
He's only got one thing.
Tatman.
Yeah?
Yeah, then he feels it fine. He takes it back and says,
you'll never get up.
Yeah, if you go down, you'll never get up. That's what Zohar says.
So he says, don't go down? It's
interesting, though. Everything else, he's like, oh, Kabbalah says this, but we don't.
Really?
Yeah. No, that's just that thing. That's the weirdest thing.
Yeah. So this guy, basically, he didn't like that. So he was Sephardi, but he wanted to go like the Rambam. The problem is he knows how he's supposed to pass with the Rambam. There's so many shaylos he doesn't pick up. So I think I told him to speak to Rabbi Zucker or something. I thought he could be his posek to help him pass with the Rambam or something. I don't know. He's one of these guys who surfaces every few years.
But it's not crazy, I mean, I guess
it's
do that.
No, a person could do that.
Practically not possible.
I mean, they're always hard to use, because, I mean, you don't know there's so many shaylas, you're not going to know how we help.
Right.
So, but I think, yeah, I mean, you pick a rav, I think it just, you have to have some sort of system, just to say I'm just going to go. But, like, there is an idea of shastatak, if you want to, you know, there is such a thing as a shopping rat or a shastatak, you know, but you have to ask the legitimate poskim or whatever.
Yeah.
Sometimes you ask Rabbi Shaila, they'll tell you, ask someone else. I've heard him say that, and that's someone else.
Why?
Right.
Why is that?
Because he knows that he leans l'chamaram, but he knows that there's other people that are right. He can't. There's such a thing as like maybe let's say Rebbe can't give a gula in there.
If your situation doesn't warrant that, then I would pay somebody else.
Oh no, maybe he does. It does warrant that, but even if it does, he can't give it.
Why?
See, because he has to see it. There's an idea. It's like something could be. It's like let's say Rebbe sees something clearly one way, you know. But he knows there are other posts come out there that go the other way. So he can't give the hora a lot there, you know, if he doesn't see it.
You know, he goes to the sheet out there. That's
yeah, he can't paskin it if just gives to see. I mean, you can tell them to ask them. They can give him the hora, but I don't think he can give a hora that he doesn't see this one.
He
says, look, if you're not sure.
See two sides.
Yeah, he sees two sides. If he's leaning more towards one, he could be say he could be making like that one.
But he hasn't seen it at all.
I don't think so. I don't
think
he does. Yeah, he says, I'm Achmir in this area. You know, I know that I'm in general,
just
my
the fact family. That he knows someone else
holds
it by it is not
enough. No, I don't think so. Because he has to really. I mean, it's, maybe if he knows in a particular case, he knows that he was mounted this exact case, maybe he could just, you know, maybe tell you he could rely on that.
Mm-hmm.
But once it's already, every case is a little bit different,
mm-hmm.
So then maybe, you know. I mean, it could be he could also factor in Psak who you are. I mean, that's also a factor. Asking a psak of a guy who's like a solid guy who's really wants to, is committed to like halacha versus a guy who's just like some high school kid who's, you know, not really that or whatever. So, I mean, you don't have to put a chumra on it. Like, let's say certain things, the shaykh to be machmir in an area. But shaykh to be machmir is very nice for a person who's a beryl ben Torah, but there's such a thing as a guy who wants to keep just keeping halacha, somebody's a baal tshuva, just whatever. You know, just, you know. You don't want to put overburden a person with halacha and to the point where that's also a factor. Who the person is a factor in the psak. Psak is hard. That's why you don't think it's legitimate to say, Rebbe said I could do this, Rebbe said this, do that game. I do this, Rebbe said I do this, you know, because shaylas are tricky. I think there's someone, I think Rebbe said, it's funny to say this, but you can't just paskin from a Rebbe said. Because it's Rebbe said to you, to one person in the context of Hora, and Hora gives to one person one situation with all the factors, isn't necessarily the same as a different situation. So Hora is a very situation dependent. So the fact that, and you know, different people ask him the same shaila, they get different answers. So he weighs in the various factors, the situations, who it is. stock is dependent upon those types of factors. So that's why you can't just
change.
Extrapolate. They change the situation. You can't extrapolate from the fact that, you know, like if something is Rebbe's open standing psak, it's one thing. But the fact that you personally asked the Mishaila about your case, you know, it doesn't mean someone else could say, oh, Rebbe said you could do this. Or you have a right to just do that. You have to know, you yourself have to be a posik to be able to start extrapolating psak. So to start, you know. Yeah, it's very interesting. It's a tricky area of psak. Is there, remember, I once saw Gemara. I forgot what it was, but I kind of realized these. I got some good ideas about psak from the Gemara itself. There was like a person who big Talmud Chacham, and they brought in these shaylos, and he was like an expert. I don't know. Something that was like showed the difference between psak and like learning a sugya. It's different. Learning a sugya is different than psak.
Didn't Ramosha talk about it in his intro?
Yeah, maybe. Sounds right. Among other things.
What is a person who's someone else's name?
Yes. It's true. It reminds me of, like, I think back to that for example of, like, Alec Feynman or something, you know? Because he was, like, there's the idea of a person who can know physics, like, in a theoretical way, but then, like, he was, like, an ex-man of experiments, you know? He was able to, like, take all the different factors into account and try to see how it would pan out, you know, like an experimentalist, a person who's rooted not just in theory, but in experiment. It's like the interplay of theory and experiment is, like, interesting because in the real world you just have a lot of factors that play in, which you wouldn't necessarily, you know, the goal of theory is to isolate out each individual factor and pinpoint the particular individual isolated case. It's an idea, because that's what you analyze. And analyze the thing is to break it down to its components and take it apart and come down to its ideas. But the world isn't simple. The world is complex, and there's many factors involved. So psak is where you have to, you know, you have many things coming together, and you have to kind of, you know, synergize them all to one, you know, person, niyog. So that's why it's complicated. But in the sugya, you're trying to do the opposite. Trying to know and more single out that each individual point separately. You know? Yeah. Okay. Should we stop here? Sounds reasonable? Alrighty.